Hey everybody, how are y'all doing today? Good, awesome. I know the last session that that Chris Rivard did was on design. Maybe you guys, some of you that are not designers, kind of fell asleep during it. This one will be a little bit more technical. I'm going to be, for what it's worth, my name is Aaron Johnson, VP of Engineering at Jive. I've been with Jive for about 4.5 years. Joining me today is Chris Bowling, Senior Software Engineer at Jive. He's working heavily on the Jive Apps team. And then Oren Teich from Heroku, whose title is Product Guy, will be doing some demos at the end. A couple things to start. Chris had a number of really good questions that were asked during the session, after the session. I want you guys to all be, raise your hand, throw an ice cream bar at me, which I didn't get, or whatever you need to do. But if you have any questions, absolutely interrupt. A big part of this, I think, is us being in this room together is like first day. We want you guys to feel really comfortable with apps, to learn a lot about apps. Not the entire team, but a lot of the, as you guys have known, the engineering team that's behind all of this apps is here. They're in the room. So please ask questions and feel free to interrupt. So we're going to go through four really giant things. The first intro is not going to take that long, so it's really more like three. First of all, I think what happens a lot with cloud is there's a lot of sort of nuance to what cloud really is, and so I'm going to try and help sort of define it for the purposes of this talk, and then kind of go through some of the problems that when you're in the cloud or you're developing an app that's outside the firewall, some of the problems that you might have faced or things that you will face and things that we're doing to actually solve those problems, and they've been touched on in some of the previous talks already. But I wanted to go into a little bit more detail with those and then also give you guys the opportunity to ask some questions about that. And then Chris and Oren are going to come up and they're going to do some demos of those things that are specific to the cloud. So first thing first, I'm not getting any laughs out of you guys for this one, but I couldn't find any double rainbows. So what does the cloud really, really mean? You know, there's a sort of three ways that people define the cloud. Typically, you'll hear about people talking about the infrastructure as a service, and those are things where you basically get like an operating system and you say, have at it. It's the things like Amazon and Rackspace. Go a little bit higher level and you have things that's the platform as a service, and it's things like Google App Engine and Heroku, where you get you're basically get not a servlet container, but a web container. And they provide a bunch of services that make it really easy for you to go build applications, but you don't have to worry about all the things behind the scenes. And then the third one is the software as a service, so things like Salesforce or like LinkedIn, where you have an API and you can build apps on top of their platform. For today, what I want to say is that we don't really care about those definitions at all. For today, what we care about are apps that are outside the firewall. That's sort of the key thing for us. So all those things aside, the things that we're thinking about on the apps team are things that are outside the firewall. And that's a pretty little guy from Palo Alto Networks customer, also a Sequoia investment. I had to throw that in there. So what I really wanted the title of the session today to be was bringing all the amazing goodness from the consumer web to the Jive stack so you can innovate quickly outside the firewall and deliver inside the firewall. And I'll say that marketing jinxed that title, but it was actually that, you know, we had kind of made up the title a long time ago and didn't get a chance to change it. But the really important thing here to kind of hammer home with a phone and a really old laptop is that one of the things that I think is exciting about apps for us is that, you know, if you go and develop on top of the Jive stack and you have to go write a plugin, let's say, and this is old, right? So if you have to develop a plugin, you have to sit there and compile and it takes 2 or 3 minutes. And then you have to restart your app server. And then that doesn't work, and so you have to do that all again. And pretty soon, like half an hour, you've done like 3 changes. The interesting thing about apps, we did a hack day at Jive a couple months ago, I forget what it was, on top of the open social stuff. And I think there was a little bit of hesitance on part of the engineering team, like, oh man, this isn't gonna work, and there's not a lot we can do. But the really amazing thing about it was how fast things were, how fast it is to just go and be able to just go write your gadget.xml, embed a bunch of HTML and JavaScript and CSS, save it, edit it, change it, refresh, and it's just like this. And so it's a very, very, very different development cycle, both from that standpoint. And also, one of the other big things is, you know, we're all engineers here. Java's a great language. It's not necessarily the most exciting one out there right now. And so if you want to develop on top of Java in the past, it's been like, well, you use Java. With apps, the ability you guys to have is to work on top of something like Heroku. So if you want to go learn Ruby, go work with Heroku. If you want to go use the Go programming language, go ahead and, you know, bust it out on top of EC2. If, God help you, you want to do .NET, you can go use Windows Azure. But the ability for you guys to sort of like, hey, you want to go learn something new, you want to try something different that's not Java, that's what apps allow you to do. And so one of the big problems you'll face is the, like I said earlier, the firewall. So all this is to say is that apps, the whole purpose of this for you guys, not only for the end users making it simple and fun and good, but also for you guys is the ability to go out and build an app on top of Rails if you want that you haven't been able to do that, or Go or Scala or whatever it is. So easy and fun to build apps. But inside the firewall, and going back to that statement earlier, so being able to deliver and innovate outside the firewall is good. Being able to deliver it inside the firewall isn't as easy and is much harder. And that's the area that sort of the nut that we've cracked. And there's all the complexity that comes with developing or deploying an app inside the firewall. So you have to deal with LDAP and SSO and whether or not IT will allow a new sort of, Tomcat instead of an RPM or whatever it is. So all the things that we kind of deal with that we all shudder at that you guys don't really want to have to touch, right? You don't want to think about that. And that's one of the other magical things about apps. You don't have to worry about all that. You live inside of our container. We handle all that for you. And so I want to go through some of the problems that we've thought about and have seen and have anticipated, and then some of the solutions that we have in the application platform to make it easier for you guys to be inside the firewall. So the first one, so if like you kind of look at if you look at, hey, you know, starting from day one, what could we have done? One of the things we could have done is said, hey, here's a REST API and go and develop your app. So the flow would be, you know, some browser requesting some app that you guys have developed out in the cloud, again, outside the firewall, that tries to request data from Jive. It's not going to work, right? You're going to hit the firewall. Nobody in IT is going to want to open up a bunch of ports for you. And even if you get one IT guy to do that for you, he's not going to want to open up to every other app developer that comes in. So obviously this one's sort of out. It's not going to work. The second one is, well, you know, maybe you could do, you know, we have these widgets and you could maybe embed an iframe and you could have the iframe kind of, be pointing out to some sort of page that lives in your cloud. And then you could try and get some data from Jive using, I guess, JavaScript, but then you're going to get hit by the same origin policy. So again, this isn't going to work. And I bring this all up because I noticed too that when, I think it was Matt asked earlier how many people had actually used OpenSocial or know what it is. I think 20% of the people raised their hands. This is actually, like, if I go to the next one, this is one of the other big things about OpenSocial for us, and this is kind of helping you guys understand how OpenSocial works, is we go and fetch. You guys have a gadget, effectively a gadget.xml file out in the cloud somewhere. We go out and fetch that, and then we actually render that. So you can see the flow here sort of changes to, instead of a browser requesting out to the cloud, you request the app via Jive. We actually go out and get that app, and render it out for you inside the, and all that's happening inside the firewall, and now you actually have access to all of our data as well. So it's a very different model than, some other ways to develop apps. But this is one of the really big important things for us delivering stuff inside the firewall. OpenSocial is a really big key part of that. So one of the other problems that kind of comes up, so one of the limitations of OpenSocial in this model is that it's always based on a user in their browser requesting a page or an app, right? And one of the powerful things that we wanted to allow was for some instance or some event to happen out in the cloud. So let's just say hypothetically, for instance, the TripIt app. Let's say there's a TripIt application. I go onto TripIt. I say, hey, I'm going to take a trip to San Francisco. I want that information to somehow get into my Jive instance. With the firewall, that's not going to happen, right? Like, there's no way that TripIt's going to be allowed to go to the hundreds of different Jive customers and say, and update or add to the activity stream through the firewall. And so one of the things, and again, we've kind of alluded to it earlier, you've heard about the Jive gateway, but one of the things we're going to do is we've created this gateway that will live out in our hosted environment. You guys as application developers will be able to publish to that and say, hey, here's a new thing that I want you to add to the activity stream for this user. Or, hey, here's something I want to add to the inbox. So for example, you saw the Green Cloud or Green Commute app earlier where, people will be able to kind of say, hey, you know, I rode my bike today 12 miles, and you can kind of get these team competitions going. If you had somebody that hadn't ridden their bike or hadn't logged in let's say, 5 days, and you wanted to send them a reminder, put something in their Jive inbox in this new What Matters interface and say, hey, you haven't done anything, and just give a reminder. This would be the way that you would do it. Through the gateway, you'll be able to publish an event or publish something to the gateway, and then your Jive instance will come and pick that up, add that to their inbox. Effectively, yeah, yeah.
So who's actually, is the app pulling it or Jive Gateway pushing it?
Your app, so your app deployed on EC2 or somewhere in your data center or on Heroku, wherever it is, would programmatically kind of reach out and push something to the gateway. And we've kind of gone back and forth. We've had a lot of discussions about, well, should the gateway sort of, maybe your app sort of define something that the gateway would then go out and pull? And we could do it that way, but I think, you know, version one is you guys kind of coming to the gateway with an HTTP post and saying, hey, here's a payload that I want you to deliver to one of my users or to a bunch of users. Other questions on this? This is definitely a pretty cool piece of functionality if you're an app developer. Yes, Scott. Yeah. That's a great clarification. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was thinking of apps in terms of something deployed on top of Google App Engine or Heroku or something like that. Clarification to say, you know, it's not an app that's living inside of somebody's browser, inside of Jive SBS. It's your guys in your system, whatever you guys are creating, whatever kind of systems that you're creating, I'll use that word, those systems being able to publish to Jive. So another problem that you're going to run into, if you guys have any laptops open today, if you go to dev.twitter.com and you say, hey, I want to go create an app that uses Twitter data somehow. And the first thing that they're going to ask you to do is they're going to ask you to create a developer account. And then they're going to say, hey, in order to use Twitter, and they literally just turned off basic auth, I think it was a week ago, 2 weeks ago, something like that, you'll have to create an OAuth consumer key and secret. And so that actually, you know, if you were just going to develop something for, you know, google.com/IG, like the personalized homepage, it's not that big of a deal, right? You go and create one consumer key and secret. You deploy the app out for all your users to be able to use on google.com/IG or Flickr or TripIt or whatever it is. And everything's well and dandy. The problem comes when you go out and now you're going to do it with Jive and in our new model. And so the problem here is that you're going to have, you know, 100, 500, you know, 1,000, and then when we become wildly successful in a year, it'll be 10,000 or 20,000 customers that are all living behind the firewall, or some of them will be outside the firewall, but there's going to be a whole lot of them. And in that model, you would have to go to Twitter for every customer that buys your app, a user that would buy your app, you would have to go to Twitter and say, hey, I need a new consumer key and secret. And that is obviously what you guys, if you wanted to do that, you very well could, but I'm guessing that you don't want to. And so one of the things that we kind of came back to with the gateway was this idea that you could go one time for your app, get a consumer key and secret from Twitter, and then register that with when you basically install your app or give your app, or not give your app to us, but what's the right word? It's not install. Submit. Yeah, when you submit your application, you'll say, here's my app, here's my consumer key and secret. And now the gateway actually acts as a proxy for you. You don't ever have to know. You will get, obviously, records about, you know, where your app is installed and how many people have bought it and all that kind of stuff. But for all intents and purposes, Flickr and Twitter and TripIt do not know that that layer lives behind. And so there's a lot less complexity for you guys to have to worry about. This, again, complex subject. Bunch of guys that have worked really, really hard on this in the back. So if you have questions about that, feel free to raise your hand. And then the next one, and this, again, has kind of come up a couple times, that, you know, there's a lot of questions about security. When you're going to go deploy something inside the firewall, initially IT is going to say, hey, well, you know, how do I know that these guys aren't going to get hacked, or that this app isn't going to do this thing to, you know, my page? And you know, these are all the things that sort of, you know, I'm on the hook for, or Brian, my boss, is on the hook for. We get, you know, asked when you get some sort of $2 million deal, they want to have security auditors come out for 3 days and kind of give you an exam of the type that nobody really enjoys to have. So, you know, again, we thought about that for apps. This is going to come up, right? And so We're having a lot of heated discussions. We don't have really an official document of the things that we'll require or do, but we've had a lot of discussions about, you know, we probably will have secure coding guidelines. We very well may do an annual security review of the app developer to sort of provide that that trust back to the people that are buying the software that, hey, we've gone out and we've actually worked really closely with this application developer. We know that their systems or their instances are secure. And there'll be a bunch of other things in here. So those are the big problems that we see with the cloud. Some of the solutions that we've developed specifically to allow you guys to innovate out there. Chris is going to come up. He's going to talk about some of the ways that we've kind of taken the Green Commute app and extended it to actually make use of the cloud. And then Oren's going to talk in general kind of about some of the cool things you can do on top of Heroku. So Chris.
All right. Cool. Thanks, Aaron. Basically today in some of the sessions, you guys have talked about, you know, how to build an app, how to make them beautiful. And then Aaron just covered the cloud. So really with this demo, what we're going to try to do here is kind of combine those and kind of go through an app example, the Green Commute app, and talk about how to leverage the cloud. We're going to cover, on the service side in the cloud, we're going to go through, the example will be for Google App Engine. We'll cover a little bit about what it is and how to get started with it. I'm going to show you how to build the Green Commute service that I built. It's pretty quick and easy. And then uploading and managing that for Google App Engine. And then just some further uses of the cloud that this demo doesn't really cover, but that you could easily do. Next. All right, so a quick recap. You've seen this Green Commute challenge a lot through the different sessions. But a recap of where it's at right now without the cloud is basically, you know, you as an employee, every day you kind of go to work, you check in, you say how you got to work, you get some points for it. You know, over time that builds up. You can see your statistics. You can compare it to connections and everything. So now we're looking to extend that. You know, all that's local to your Jive instance. So for this demo, we're going to use Google App Engine as the cloud service. And the use case for this is really the product guy said, hey, you know, wouldn't it be really cool if we can not only look at your use of how you're commuting, and not versus just your connections or anything, but really your company versus all the other companies. So in order to do that, you need to have some kind of mechanism for persistence, storage, compute outside of your Jive instance. So that's where we're looking at the cloud. We're going to have clouds do persistence. We're going to have compute in the cloud, and we're going to leverage Google App Engine to do that. So why? Cross-instance compute and storage, scalability, security, and as you'll see, it's super quick and easy to get up and running. All right, so what is Google App Engine? So basically, just to read this one, Google App Engine is a cloud technology platform for developing and hosting web applications in a Google-managed data center. Okay, what's that mean? Basically, it means as a developer at home or as a developer at a small company, like, you can take advantage of Google's infrastructure. I mean, we all know what that means, and it's super easy. Basically, you can basically write a service, and now you have access to their infrastructure. You're scalable, efficient. Next slide. All right. So we're gonna get up and running with Google App Engine. So I'd never done this before this presentation. I hadn't used Google App Engine, didn't know what it was, didn't know what I was really getting into with it. I thought, you know, I kind of entered it with open eyes and see what happens. I was really surprised. It's kind of like, Jive apps. It's really simple. I was part of the hackathon Aaron was talking about. Hadn't done a Jive app before. Super simple and easy. So with Google App Engine, really it's two steps. Download the Java SDK. And you can run it just like that script and point to your WAR, and you're up and running. So it's really that simple to get up and running with Google App Engine. All right, so the Green Commute app service. So now we're going to kind of go into the service. So now we have in our local instance, we have the App Engine up and running. Now we're going to talk about the service that I built to deploy to the cloud. So most of these are pretty standard technologies. I think you guys are familiar with a lot of them. Spring, REST, JDO. We're going to go over kind of some of the configs that you have to set up in those to get it up and running. So a little bit of code here. So what we're looking at here is just the Spring Context ML. Anyone who's used Spring is familiar with this Context XML. But basically, you just have a manager here with a persistence factory being dependency injected into it. And for this example, we're using JDO. The Google App Engine supports JPA as well. So what we have here is the persistence manager factory. And then down at the bottom, basically, here's where I kind of highlighted it. So the nice thing about Google App Engine is a lot of the code you're going to see is just standard Java code, something you write every single day. But the nice things are the integration points, and this is one of them. They're pretty small and seamless, but it does a lot for you. So right here is where you see JDO, the integration point. It's the App Engine JDO that we're using for our persistence factory. All right, and then here's the basic REST service we define. We're just saying anything at /REST is going to come in, and we're going to get posted to this service implementation, user manager that we defined earlier. And so, and in this, all this code, we're going to post up these slides and code and everything like that, so you'll get to see all this. So this REST service, basically REST call implementation, this is the getter. So basically what we're doing here is we're going to say, call a get, and we're going to pass in your company name. So if I'm at Jive, I'm going to call the REST service, I'm going to say Jive, and it's going to show, okay, Jive versus all the other companies out there. And this is really end-to-end. So that's the first part. What we're going to do is call the manager down here. And, oh, back to the other side. So the manager down at the bottom. And you can see, basically, this is your code in the manager. It's just a basic select string. We're getting the manager factory, getting your persistence manager, and then you're just saying execute. And that's going to basically call the getter. It's going to fetch all those companies for you. And, I mean, I did the calculations. I mean, you can imagine it's just iterating through that list. And you're going to get back your object. So now that we've kind of built this service, I want to run it locally on my instance to test out, see how it's doing. So like you saw in the previous demo, when you downloaded the SDK and ran it, you're going to run the same script, except for in this case, you're going to point to your WAR. Super simple. To test it out, I don't know, I was using curl. You can do post curl, and you're just posting JSON to it, and then just calling the getter. Like I said, it's the REST commute, and then just your company name. All right, so now that we've built, and so now we have the Google App Engine locally, we've built our service, how hard is it to actually get the service up and out into the cloud? So really, it's pretty simple, especially if you have a Google account. You go on there, you can go, basically go there, you register your name, you go, and then what they give you is your application ID.appspot.com. So that's yours. So basically one account, you get an App Engine, you get that URL, that's yours. So then to actually load up your app to Google App Engine, to the cloud, same thing, you just call this script, super simple, the script update in your WAR, and it actually loads it up to it. And as you can see, it provides quite a bit of functionality for you. CPU time, lot of logging, and everything's just there available for you, all built in Google App Engine. All right, so we're going to show you. So now we've loaded it in the cloud. We've built the service. It's up in the cloud. We're going to show you a quick demo. Okay, so you've seen this a few times today. So what we have here is the MyStats, the connections. That was before. That was with the local store. That's your local Jive instance. And this is all live and running. So now we're going to go to My Company. And let's see. You can see we haven't checked in today. There's we've never ridden the bus. Other companies haven't ridden the bus. So let's say, you know, we're competitive. So we rode the bus today. So we're going to go check in. We're going to select bus. Yep. 100 miles. Nice. Check in. And there you go. So that basically, what that did was it took my information, it published to the cloud, and this is all up and running, live, published to the cloud. It did a get to get everyone else's, all the other companies. So really, there are no other companies riding the bus right now. So obviously, I'm the leader. So, yep, that's the demo for that one. Next. All right. I know you love the transition. Come on, I was thrown in there. So, very fast. All right, so what else could we do? Basically, so now we have the service up. There's a few things. I mean, Google App Engine, I encourage you all to go check it out, see how simple it is for yourself. Like I said, we'll post a bunch of these demos and everything. We didn't cover everything in this demo that it's able to do, but one of the things we could have done was OAuth. So Google App Engine does provide support for OAuth. It basically gives you the endpoints, and you kind of fill all those out yourself and implement it. And then you can use their API to kind of check user info and authorization, but it comes built with support for OAuth. Aaron mentioned the Jive Gateway in our app. If we wanted to interface with Twitter or Facebook, maybe we wanted to post some, you know, how good we were doing, what we're communicating to our Twitter or Facebook account, we could do that. And a late arriving transition, and then publishing. Aaron touched on it. basically, you know, like say I haven't checked in or anything for a while, you know, from my app in the cloud, I can actually publish to the gateway using the URL, say, you know, below is a sample URL or something like that. I can publish to the gateway, and then later that can make its way into my inbox as far as saying, hey, you didn't check in today. You need to go use the app. So, yep, that's it. Thank you.
All right, great. Okay, so you guys heard about Google App Engine. I think one of the really interesting things talking about cloud is what the services you're actually getting, right? Why would you bother doing this? Because anyone can buy a server and deploy something and blah, blah, blah. So what are you really trying to get? So I'm going to talk about Heroku, which is a cloud provider. So very much like Google App Engine, platform as a service is the name. So, and apparently my remote does work. Okay. So Heroku is a platform as a service company. We specifically focus on Ruby. It's a programming language. Show of hands here. I'm curious. Just a little technology question survey. How many people have used Ruby? How many people have used Git? How many people have deployed an application into the cloud? Okay, so it's exactly the same people for all three questions. That's a very interesting overlap. So first, to talk about what Heroku is sometimes it's best to just show an example. So some of the things that have been on Heroku already today is a lot of people actually try and build a lot of community. So Best Buy is a great example. Best Buy is constantly using APIs to do all sorts of things. They actually use both Google App Engine and Heroku for their services. So they found it's really very useful to rapidly put together ideas, see how things can work. They don't know what's going to hit. Sometimes they can get incredible scale and demand. So this is a site that's running on Heroku, Idea Exchange. Some really interesting things that they have an Android tablet that's theoretically coming out, and that idea came off of this site, so we'll see when that finally comes out. Another interesting site that I found out about recently running on Heroku, this is the Open App Market. This is really cool. They, how many of you guys have iPhones? Okay. So, you can add a page to your, if you take an iPhone, take a mobile web page, you can add it to your homepage, and if you program it really, really well, it can actually look like a native app. Well, what these guys have done is they've taken the iTunes storefront concept to that. So they have this entire thing where they have a catalog you can buy, they have this entire authentication system, so all of that's running on top of Heroku. Here's another mobile app that's pretty cool. These guys are doing, it's actually the number one book app on both the iPhone and the iPad. It's actually the number 25 app on the iPad overall. And what you can do is you can get access to 26,000 books or 23,469 books. And you download to your iPad and you can read. Now, something that's in common with especially this example and this example, and this is something that Jai was talking about, is when you're developing apps, you really need to think about two completely different components, right? You have a user-facing side. You know, here it might be a mobile front end. In Jive, it's your open social gadgets front end. And then you're going to have what your data, where your business process, everything that makes you different. And so you need to have two different technologies. Sometimes it's going to be JavaScript for your front end. Sometimes it's going to be Objective-C, and then your back end, what you're going to be doing that in, be it Java or Ruby. So when you're running those back end things, sometimes you also need to worry about some things like scale. And I can't think of a better example of scale than Facebook. So this is the stupidest app. Hopefully they're not in here. The stupidest app known to man. It's just a game. But it is amazing, these games sometimes, right? These guys have millions of users. And this is the kind of problem. This is the app, if you're into these kind of things, is called Lucky Train. Go at it. It's, according to CNN, innovative games. Anyway, the point being that these guys have created some really interesting games. It's got a Flash front end. It's integrated into Facebook. And then they have this whole entire back end where all the value comes. What we hear time and time from app developers is, you know, you can just put together something flashy, that's fine, but where you're really going to get value is in how all, like, everything that all these people in this room can collaborate together, can work together, and the only way you can do that is with these interesting backends. So that's what we've been doing, and at Heroku, this screenshot's last night, and black never works, but hopefully you can read that number. So we have 84,734 apps on the platform as of last night. If someone has a nice device and goes to Heroku.com, you can yell out what the number is. I'm sure it's 84,900 or something like that. We do about 2,000 new applications a week right now. And why is that? How has that come about? How can we have so many apps on the platform today? Well, what happens is for us, it's really, really easy. So the way you deploy an app is kind of ridiculous. In fact, it's so ridiculous I want to show you. So we're gonna see how this goes. The network's been awfully flaky. Yeah, I know. 84,940. There you go. Even more than I thought. Great. So, let's see how this goes without. Okay. So, hopefully, you can see my terminal. So, we're going to fly live here. Yeah, maybe not. I don't know if you guys have been having the same problem.
Try re-authenticating. It dropped for a while.
What's the password?
S-O-L-S-E-T. We can try plugging you hardline, too.
No, you're good.
I'm good now.
Okay. If that doesn't work, we'll hardline you.
All right. You guys can see the terminal okay? Great. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to create a sample application. So we're just going to go here. We're going to do... So that first command was just setting up my environment, just an alias to set up my environment. Rails new Jive world. Okay. So we just created an app. You know, that's just a stupid framework. It doesn't matter. This app could be the most complex thing you've ever seen in your life, or it could be a very, very simple thing. It really doesn't matter. It happens to be a very simple thing. It's going to say hello world. Instead of going through how Rails works and everything, I just want to show you what the process of deploying an app and what the value comes. So we now have this app. So you would say, okay, I want to deploy this to the internet. So Git is a version control system. You've heard of CVS. If you've really been doing it for a while, you've heard of RCS. Probably most of you use Subversion or Perforce or something else. Git is a new class of version control systems. It's a distributed version control system. I could do a two-hour talk on why Git rocks and everyone should be using it, but we won't do that now. Instead, what I'll say is what we realized is how do you transfer an app from one place to another is actually a subcase of version control. Because what are you really trying to do? You're trying to get your app from one place to another in version control, and you actually want to be able to roll back and see all these things and all these different features and track who's doing things. So we actually use a version control system, Git, as our deployment mechanism. So the only other piece is there is a command line, which simply just calls some APIs on our site. So what we're going to do is we're just going to run here Heroku create. And what this is doing is this is reaching out to Heroku right now. And it's saying, please provision a new application on Heroku, provision a database, set up the server, set up the routing, set up everything you need. And actually, I don't know if this is true, but one of my computer science professors, a compiler construction guy, said, and of course we always know that there's only two hard problems in computer science, right? Naming things, cache expiration, and off by one errors, of course. But naming things is the hardest, and he said that it takes about, average programmer spends 12% of their time thinking of variable names. So, you know, in trying to make things easier, we actually, you know, I just said Heroku create, we automatically named it. So here we have this app, it's called Halo Lightning 32. And that app is live. It was just created, it didn't exist before. If anyone went there right now, it's gonna say no one's pushed anything to this site yet. So, but it's been added, and in the process, we also went and we set up Git. So now all I need to do is I'm just gonna come here and I type Git, Git add. I need to actually check everything in. Okay. So I checked everything in, and now I'm just going to push it up to Heroku. So what this is doing is it's using Git, and you can see, you know, compressing, pushing it up to Git. And now this is where the magic happens. We've identified that you have a Rails app. So we inspected the code. We said, oh, look, it's a Rails app. We detected that there's some configuration that needs to happen. We detected that you have some gems. Gems are the Ruby world's way of packaging up different software. So it's we're now actually going out and collecting across the internet all the gems that your app's going to require. This will take about a minute. There's about 20 megabytes of stuff across. So you'll see it start to go in a second. And we're then going to compile all of that together, and we're going to make what we call a slug. And a slug you can think of as like your app running. There you go. You can start to see it now. It's getting all these. This is all the different pieces that my app is using. And if you were using OAuth, for example, there's a bazillion gems, right? So you can just include OAuth, and you don't even need to worry about trying to figure it out. It's a simple API to program to, and away you go. Now, what's great about this is in about another 30 seconds, my app will be up and running. That's literally the entirety of what you need to do. So we've made it incredibly simple. And further, there's nothing proprietary here. So I think a really important point about what we've done is this is using standard SQL database. There's nothing fancy you're doing. There's no custom APIs. The slogan we like to use is if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. What we're saying is we're just enforcing best practices. So this isn't a case where you're going to write an app for Heroku. You're just writing a Ruby app, and it's going to run here as well as anyplace else. So what was it? It was Hollow Lightning. Where's my mouse? I'm just going to copy the URL. And if we now go to the site, it's now live. So that's what we just pushed up there. So that's really all it takes. And we could change it, and we could have made it whatever. And you can start to see here the real power, right? Because now you can take an open social gadget, you can create your XML here, which is obviously incredibly easy, and you can have an app running. Now, you might say, oh, well, that's great. It's easy to get an app running. Yeah, getting an app running is hard. It's actually keeping it running forever that's hard. Yeah, getting an app running is easy. Keeping an app running forever is hard. So the next step you're going to start saying is, well, wait a second. I've written the next great thing, and it's actually successful, and it gets into 10,000 different Jive apps. Or, frankly, it gets into one Jive app with 100,000 users. I mean, this is a hard problem set you're now managing. So you need to start to look at things like scale. And so this is actually something that we've taken a pretty nice tack at, too. So what we have is this concept of dynos. And if you go to our pricing page, I think we have the nicest... Black never works on projectors. It is really pretty, I promise. There's some way to invert, right? Whatever. I don't remember how to invert. So what you can do is you can simply drag things for scale. You can see it's doing something. But what's actually going on here is we have this concept of a dyno. And a dyno is one concurrent process. So you get your first one free. So this app, it's running for free. You always could have deployed. And then you're like, shoot, I need 100 times the amount of traffic. So all you do is you simply, and I could have done it through the website, but since you can't see it, I'll do it here. So we'll just say Heroku. So first we'll run Heroku dyno so you can see. And you can see Hollow Lightning 32 is currently running on one dyno. Well, whatever. So then we can say Heroku dynos 5, and that's it. We just scaled our app to, you can actually see, so this Heroku PS, like PS on your machine, you can actually see, so in the time it took me to do those two commands, three of the dynos already managed to get booted, and the other one's starting up. So it takes, you know, 2-3 seconds to increase your concurrency. So this is a case where all of a sudden you actually get those million hits, you're actually getting that user base, boom, you're done, you don't need to worry about it, it's completely taken care of for you. And there's obviously a lot of great features that are available on the platform. But what I wanted to just kind of get at is this is a fully managed environment. And this is, I think, a really important part of cloud. So there's, of course, a vendor pitch about Heroku. But what I want to get across about cloud in general is that if you look at players like Google App Engine, platform as a service players, right? And Google App Engine and Heroku are the leaders in there right now. Azure has some interesting plays that they're coming out with. If you look at what we're really offering, what we're offering you is the ability to get things up at an incredible rate. And this cannot be undersold. What we've actually seen is a change in behavior where all of a sudden, when it goes to create an app, takes literally seconds, you start to create more apps. And that sounds obvious, but it has unintended consequences because you're going to make things you never thought of making. In fact, what we start to find, even internally, is you'll have 100 apps and you'll push things up and you'll try and you'll be like, you know what? I'm going to push this code change as a new app. And I'm going to send you this URL, I'm going to send you this URL, I'm going to test out how this stuff is working. And I'm going to push 20 changes a day, and I'm going to see how this is working. You can get this incredible tight feedback loop. And this is something that all these cloud providers are offering you. Because it's a fully managed environment, you're not sitting there waiting on IT. You're not sitting there hoping things work and don't work. And you get some really great features, too. Like, if you do blow things up, releases basic. Okay. Oh, actually, I wanted advanced. You also get these really nice features, like let's just make a change to our app. Heroku config add foo equals bar. Heroku releases. Right, so here you can see, this is everything that happened, right? So I had my first deploy, there's my Git thing, I added that releases feature that I just showed you, here I just did a change config, and let's say one of those things blew up your app. Well, instead of worrying about IT and freaking out, you can literally just come here and say, Heroku rollback, and boom, it's rolled back. And now, if we say releases, we can see, I got the sequencing. It was doing a few things in the background, which is why there's now more. But you can see we rolled back. So it's it takes about 5 seconds, so when you're doing it in real time, it gets a little freaked out sometimes. But the point being, you can really, really easily get a complete power and control, especially with the scale. The final thing I wanted to talk about... Presentation. Not the final, but a few other things I want to talk about is you need to understand the complexity of what all these players are doing. Google App Engine, ourselves, anyone. Is to run an app these days, if you really want to do it right, requires a lot of moving pieces, right? So if you go to our page, you can see this architecture diagram better. I promise there's things over there. But the key point is you have things like a Varnish cache, right? A static asset cache. You have a routing mesh to figure out where your current available resources are. You have SQL database. You have replication going on. You have Memcache and other caching mechanisms. You need all of these pieces to come together in a way for you. And this is one of the big values that a platform as a service does, is they've encoded the best practices. So you're going to get an app that's incredibly fast, that can handle the scale, and you're not going to be in a situation where you're blowing everything up. Our pricing page doesn't work too well. So finally, the last thing I wanted to show you was actually add-ons. So this is something that is very analogous to the whole Jive Apps marketplace, and is around cloud services. So if you think about you're trying to build an app, right? So just like a user on Jive is going to say, oh, I want this feature, and they're going to look at the Jive Apps marketplace to see what capabilities are available for them. You as a developer have these same options available to you today. There are more and more cloud services available. So when you're building an app, you're going to say, oh, well, I need to add search. And raise your hand if you've ever used Solr. Okay, of those of you raising your hand who use Solr, how many of you enjoyed using configuring and setting up Solr? Okay, good. There's no sadists in the house. So there's companies, though, now that are doing things like, for example, WebSolr. They full-time manage a Solr instance. Solr is a search engine. It's incredibly complex and hard to set up. You can, with one click, get this added to your app. And so now all of a sudden you're in a situation where you're saying, but I want to make this really complex thing that I can offer to my Jive customers. I want it to do, it has to have incredible search. It has to have incredible, all these capabilities. And you can take these other features that other people have already developed and simply integrate it into your app. You know, on Heroku, on any cloud provider, it doesn't matter. You have these guys available. So we, Jive Apps has a marketplace. We have a marketplace of these available to see as well. And it gives you a really great sense. You know, you want to use a NoSQL data store for something. You want to use caching. You want to use search. You want to use mailing users, right? Mail deliverability. I don't know about you guys, but this one's a shockingly hard problem. So, you can pay someone who's already done it. So, bottom line, if you do have any questions, I want to let you contact, feel free to contact. But I think what you really want to take away is the cloud stuff, it's about how you can make your app, your back-end app, actually work in a way. And in particular, I want you to think about when you remove these barriers, when building an app goes from something that's really painful to really easy, you can get really creative. You can start to come up with some ideas that didn't exist before. And I think that's probably the most exciting piece of it. It's going to open up the opportunity for the apps on Jive, frankly, and where your guys' business can be pretty dramatically. So if you've had any questions, I'm around. And otherwise, thank you very much.